Welcome everyone to another episode of Leadership from the Heart. Today we have the dynamic duo behind Grounded with Data, Patty Brownsword and Dr. Jack Slingluff. Patty and Jack blend intuitive leadership, strategic innovation, and data-driven decision-making to help entrepreneurs and business leaders find clarity, alignment, and sustainable success. Together, they challenge the traditional leadership norms by showing that data and intuition are not opposites, but they're essential partners in creating thriving businesses. So get ready for an engaging and insightful conversation filled with actionable takeaways, humor, and a fresh perspective on teamwork and independence. Welcome, Jack and Patty. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for being here. I'd love to start the conversation where you guys can share in your own perspective a time in your leadership journey where you had to shift from working alone or being an individual contributor to a team, what that looked like, and how does collaboration now unfold in your day-to-day?
Sure. So I'll go first. I have worked in like ad agency life and corporate settings. And in those environments, it was much more about camaraderie. Like you have your lane and you work through and you go through and everybody moves things forward. But it wasn't until I really embraced collaboration with Jack. We had hired an executive coach to talk about our business together. And what we learned was like my favorite word was camaraderie at that point, and his was collaboration. And it just was like, oh, that gets me. Oh, I'm rubbed the wrong way. I just want us to move forward. But when I actually let go of control of the process, and Jack and I really embraced working together, like we really found that when our two brains combined, the work output was better, our proposals were better, just everything we do together is better. And that's why when we do work with a client, it's the Jack and Patty show. They get both of us because of our unique skill sets, but then our synergies that we get when we're combined. I'm addicted to it now. I can't, if I go a day without chatting with Jack, it's like there's something missing. Yeah. But it was that shift, right, to this kind of relief. And now I have renewed energy and we have stronger results with what we do. Yeah. And I just wish that for everyone. I've seen it happen in ad agency life with, you know, the copywriter and the creative director. Like they have to always work together to create something magical. But that doesn't always happen in everywhere. And it's like, how can you deploy that more? How can you embrace that more? It's exciting, it's thrilling, but you have to find also the right people.
Right. Follow-up question, Patty. Why don't you think people, having gone through releasing control yourself, why don't people embrace that?
You know, it's really just an issue with that resisting the collaboration. Jack, Jack should answer this one. He has a good strategic perspective on the situation.
I love that.
You know, people come from so many different environments. And I was joking with Patty about the Jetsons and Space Loose Rockets. And really, you know, that type of environment where a person is raised and they grow into another environment, that sets their mindsets as leaders. And so if you were in that high transactional theory X and organization and you start to be a leader in another organization or even within that one, you're going to have those tendencies. So it's hard for you to back up and embrace a new way of doing things when that's all you know. Yeah. And so I think it's not necessarily nurture and nature, but it is nurture and nature.
Yeah. And so what was it like for you? I assume based on what Patty said that you were always a high collaborator. And so what is it like as a high collaborator to persuade people to see how special collaboration is?
I'm certainly thankful for the ability to collaborate with Patty every day. It's so fun and so dynamic. And so what I think people see is when Patty and I interact with each other is they see that and we invite them in. One of our favorite things is when we're working with a client and they're collaborating along with us and we're picking up on all the energies together. I think that is just such a wonderful experience to have. And then they start to see the vision and then they become vested in it. And then it's easier to move forward with whatever that goal or objective may be.
Yeah, Jack has an uncanny ability to just build community naturally. We're in an elevator and he makes friends with people. It's like the small talk. Like I don't do small talk. Right. You know, and he's good at small talk and he likes to go deep. I just would rather just get into it. But it builds that relationship, right? Like, and you can see in the stuff in Jack's background, he's got stuff that people always want to talk about. And there's always something that resonates with them that just brings everybody closer together. So I think he's done this his entire life because it just naturally comes to him. And for me, I'm learning from him how to do it better. So the nature nurture situation, it takes leading and then viewing, for example, and knowing there can be a better way.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. So Jack, what's in your background that has people so attracted?
Well, we have a lightsaber up there. You never know. You know, casual Fridays, you might need it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, true.
I have a couple sports totems here. I have both the Cleveland Browns and I have Tampa Bay. One-of-a-kind guitar right here. That was a prototype for one of the Line 6 guitar lines. And as you can see, a whole assortment of nerd things up there. You know, I even have a little statue of Elvis up there. So I have Bach, Beethoven, and Elvis.
And so you're able to connect with people on their level at just about anything that obviously you have interest in, being a well-rounded human being.
I try, but you know what? It's, I just like people.
Right.
And so these things are just part of me. They're not up there necessarily to start a conversation. And Patty and I have learned that that's become a good outcome. But, you know, people are interesting. You never know who you're going to know until you start a conversation.
Same. I couldn't agree more. So let's jump into this data-driven mindset along with the collaboration of intuitive learning, because I do agree with you guys. I love data coming from an operations background.
And our people, our tribe.
I do think that my superpower is the intuition and the data. I just don't know that people think that they're both, like you guys, the yin and the yang, the data and the intuition blended together, knowing when to pull on one and let go of the other. So let's talk about first, how did you get into data and intuition?
I feel like both of us naturally are inclined to intuition, but we've been really focusing on harnessing it more now that we are so inside of data, because intuition plays that crucial role in decision-making.
Yeah.
When you have all the potentialities and you need to collapse some down for analysis, you have to use some kind of internal guidance. And so for us, we take that internal guidance from clients and we actually put it into like quadrants and we quantify it. Like we quantify their intuition based on questions that they answer from us in order to start categorizing and figuring out what the might be the best approach. And then you utilize data to support or refute what some of those combinations are. Right? Like it's more or less, you don't want confirmation bias. That's for sure. You know, so you don't want to just look for the answers that support your answer or your intuition, but you want to make it a well-rounded exercise, but you got to narrow down the playing field. Right. And then we've talked about this before, Jack and I, many times. We're thinking about writing it. We wrote a workbook on it and I want to turn it into an ebook. So coming soon. But about intuition and leadership, Jack and I had done this whole culture coaching session with a nonprofit we were working with because we had built them operations and strategic dashboards, but they had never had that data before.
Yes.
In that way, to be able to answer the right questions. So we did a whole coaching session with the leaders and the data heroes, as we call them. They're the data input people that need to be leveled up and shown that they're the heroes of the organization. But there was a module in that on the importance of that intuition, right? Like, you don't discount it. It plays a crucial role. And that's just in the data decision making, in making data-driven decisions for a business. But then as a leader, it can help you, like if you utilize your intuition in the right way, you can have a natural ability to like read the room.
Yes.
And make aligned choices. There's something else that Jack and I do, because data is data, whether it is numbers generated from a business or from the alignment of the stars and planets when you were born, right? I'm all about it. I'm all about all the data. And there's a concept that we utilize to help our clients with understanding who they are through human design and gene keys. Too much for a whole conversation here. There is a component of understanding the kind of fear that you may feel. And as what you're designed, how you're designed to process it. Because there are some fears that when you feel them, they are yours, but you you learn the next right step of how to pursue it. Like, are do you investigate further in order to get more information? Do you look to others? Do you test things? Like, what is the right approach for that fear? But there are some other fears that when you feel, they're actually not yours. If energy, if everything is energy and data and you're feeling the room, the vibes of the room, it's coming from someone else. And as a leader, it actually helps you use the right language and frameworks to pull information from people. Because if you're feeling something that you don't necessarily feel in order to make decisions, then you know someone else in the room is, and you can use leadership tactics and questioning and bringing people in to get those understandings from those people. So we use it all.
Yes, to all of it. Mm-hmm. I do have a follow-up question, but I want to ask, Jack, what's your perspective?
You know, I think about intuition in a couple of different contexts. It's really the first step in scientific inquiry. You have a thought, you have an idea, you have a theory about something. And the way you explore it is to take the next logical step and to get some information about that item, or about that idea, that intuition, that feeling. And so you just keep growing gradually and very succinctly paced as you grow, and then you eventually can uncover what that is. And I think that in intuition, in many ways, is a way of actually understanding what it is that you want to know more about and pursuing it, as long as it makes sense. Now, where a lot of people get into trouble, this being the caveat, is they take intuition too literally, and they make too much of an uncomfortable leap. And it could be down a rabbit hole, a bad lane, and this could cost you a lot of time and effort and resources to actually recover from that. But if you take intuition to help you to guide to the next step, the next deliberate step, and the next, and then you can unpeel that onion, so to speak. I was talking with Patty earlier, and if you think about the iPhone itself, Steve Jobs had an intuition that this would be a good product. And at the time, a lot of naysayers, you're never going to do that, right? And when people went wild when he unveiled the first iPhone on stage, then that's become the standard for the past, 20 years now, thereabouts. But that all started with an intuition, not science, but use science and then data to back that and support it and to reinform it, and maybe to make slight adjustments on what can be incorporated or not incorporated with your goal. That's my thinking.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I think there are lessons in both, right? Taking the full leap and learning that, oh shit, this was harder than I thought. And, you know, learning where you are paced. And mm-hmm. also for me, I love the fact that you said, just take the next logical step, right? It's okay to move slowly. And in our current world, speed is everything. Yeah.
But I love that you used technical marketing research terminology. Shit is used quite frequently.
Is there a time where a person, or do you guys have an example of when to follow the intuition over the data, or data over intuition, and it be right?
So I think it's different for everyone because of the fact that we do know and follow human design, with the aspect of, does the intuition come from someone's gut? Does it come from their brain? Like, Jack's a mental projector, meaning his ideas, he just downloads. He walks, whenever he's like stuck on a topic that we're going, he walks down his hallway past his Velvis, another story for another time, and the magic light over here. And he comes back and he's like, I have the idea. Like, he just gets these downloads. But for me, I'm what's called an emotional generator. And so while I feel things in my sacral, I have to ride my emotional wave to make sure it's still a hell yes, or it's a, you know, an F no, but I have to do a check while I'm riding that wave. And so understanding how it works for you, you can then leverage your intuition better.
You're in Las Vegas. Let me give you an example. So if you're in a casino, mm-hmm. there are machines that will pay out more mathematically, even though they should be neutral just because their location and the denomination of the machines. But if you're walking by a machine and you have a strong sense that you need to play it, if it's a truly genuine sense, take the chance. Why not?
Even because if the mathematical logic behind it, yeah,
may not be right. it has to be a genuine sense of just not you trying to talk yourself into something.
Yeah. Well,
otherwise I would talk myself into a lot of bad things every day.
Well, the interesting thing is that with that, it may have been not for you to win. It may have been for you to pause to not be somewhere else. Right? Like you were meant to pause because then 5 minutes later, a friend walks down the aisle. And that was what you're meant to do. So don't question the intuition if it's coming from the right place. Like a lot of people, myself included, if I get ideas in my head, that's actually not intuition. I'm a wide receiver and I'm picking up from the world, right? But when my intuition talks to me, I know what it's saying. I know where it is and I know how it works, right? And so like sometimes Jack, like being a mental projector, he can solve everyone's problems and answer everybody's questions, but they're not all his to solve and question. He has to wait to be asked for something. And I have to wait. Everybody really has to wait to respond to an outside influence. If you have this idea up here, that's not it.
Right.
That's not the response. It has to be either outside or down here, unless you're a mental projector like Jack, but he still has to wait to give the nugget of knowledge.
Yeah. So you said emotional generator. I don't know that term. I know that I'm a generator. I know that my best friend and my wife are manifesting generators, but you said emotional generator. Is there a difference?
Yes, there is. So there are the two different types of generators is the sacral generator and then the emotional generator. They get their energy from both get the energy from the sacral chakra or the sacral center. But for me, I have a channel that connects between my emotional solar plexus and my root. And what that causes is the emotional wave. And so I have an internal wave that I'm negative or positive, but it's just me.
Yeah.
But then there's three different kinds of emotional types. So there's, you know, whether it's like tribal family unit and your waves kind of go in a certain direction. And then there's the global, which is another direction. So there's so many nuances. And I love all of it because it's data. So.
Yeah, I would love to know more about that. I didn't know that there were so many intricacies inside of human design. That's amazing.
Oh yeah. I fell in love with human design 2 or 3 years ago, but I'm a generator. So when I fall in love with something, I go deep until I'm not shiny anymore.
Hole.
Right. And so I'm still deep in this rabbit hole. And then I fell in love with ChatGPT, right? As soon as I saw Ryan Reynolds on LinkedIn have an ad written in his voice, I went, the potential. And I've been playing with it since February of 2023.
Yeah.
And so now we teach ChatGPT basics and some advanced stuff for everyone because we have a program, we just call it AI for everyone. Everyone should get to use this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then I took, and now I build based on the person's human design and gene keys and the 5 P's of marketing. And I can build a book for someone over 8 sessions. Cause if I did it just and gave them a book, their brain would melt. Like it's a process, right?
Yeah.
And I made Jack's brain melt. Cause I was like, I made you this book over the weekend. Do you want to read it? And he's like, oh God, you know, but I use ChatGPT to help me funnel through stuff because I know it so deeply though, I can call BS on it when I was just experimenting. Cause I'm also
for
a 3-5, which is really just screw around to find out and then tell everybody about it. So I had to do a lot of screwing around to get the secret sauce right of how to build this GPT that matches with this person's human design and gene keys, and then how to help construct their marketing mixes and business model based on what makes them shiny. And then, so I took Jack's celestial blueprint, which is like 100 pages. Mine's only like 60 something. I've built some for others that range, you know, between 70 and 80 pages. And there's prompts and there's journal prompts and questions. But what I did then was I took his and mine and I put it into our ghostwriter of the GPT that I already built. So I'd already built this GPT to write like me, like Jack, and in like grounded with data in our voices. And I trained it in like the traditional way. What's tradition? When it's 2 years ago. But then I put in the celestial blueprints, as I call them, magic. Utter magic. The stuff that comes out of it is writing the way that we're supposed
that
to.
That you.
That it resonates the right way. And so like, it doesn't just write how we always have. It writes how we always should have.
Yeah.
And it's wow, just that's magic.
That's
I
deep.
I love it. That's what's deep. Lighting me up right now.
Yeah, I can see that. I want to ask you, I'm a 2-4. I want to know more. But Jack, what's your perspective?
Easy breezy genius. I know. I've got so many 2-4s in my life. That's awesome. I haven't met a 2-4 generator, though. That's exciting. Sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know how I could touch that.
You're a type of projector, right? What does that mean for you? What does that look like?
Well, I'm not as versed in human design as Patty is, but from my perspective, what that means is that certain feelings, certain knowledge just is innate. It's just there for me to use and to share as needed. On that side, though, I've been told I need to hold back because I can overwhelm people pretty quickly with the insights that I'm getting. Fun little story. Patty and I were in a meeting and I got punched.
Oh, well, yes.
In front of clients.
I hit him.
Clay hit you. I was like, wow.
In front of clients.
It was me. And she punched you because?
I had the answer.
He had the answering minutes before I could screw around and figure it out. And then he was like, yeah, that's what I had said. And I was like, you son of a bitch.
Another marketing research term. Okay, just
yes. But that's the thing is like he has to know when he has the answer, but they're not ready to hear it yet. What they had needed was that walkthrough process to get to it.
Of course.
Because they needed to feel it too.
Yes.
Because they weren't, they just didn't have, they needed all the steps. And I probably also gave them too much. Jack and I have a tendency to fire hose, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, you are our little baby plants and we will water you and make you grow. Fire hose, you know? Sorry, you're like, you know, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, even with, I was going around and hitting a dead end and coming back and hitting a dead end, because that's like my 3 tendency of just finding. But they needed to see that process. So that's why Jack and I like to do that collaboration with the clients, because it makes them comfortable to know that we're just not, it's like, here's your answer. And they're like, I don't know how you got there. Like, mm-hmm. They want to see how you did your work. And
yeah.
The thing is we never go more elaborate than we need to. Like, we don't, like, we're data analysts and we love data, but we will create a very simple Excel spreadsheet model. And Jack will like have a page that's like, don't touch these. I have these on lock, make these changes. And this is what we do, rather than black box stuff, try to build things. And so that the, you know, it all just churns, it's gotta be simple so that our clients can explain it to their clients. Like, everybody's got a client. And so if they're trying to explain it, their stakeholders, their boss, their, you know, they use it for their customers. Like, they've got to be able to explain it. So we keep it simple.
Yeah.
But Jack as a projector can see how to fix things. He knows how to fix, but not everybody is always ready to
be
fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. And simple. So they use it. You know, once things get too complicated, people just like, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like,
they tune out. They tune out.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. No, that's great.
Well, we have an expression. We call it feng shuiing. We like to just boil it down to what is needed for that person in that moment. They may need the whole elaborate thing, but if we can boil it down to something just usable, manageable, I think they appreciate it more.
For sure. Well, because they can understand it, they can embrace it, and then they can prepare themselves for the next step, just like you said about intuition, right?
Yeah.
So my company is called Leadership from the Heart. That was, well, Jack will be back. And that came to me while I was in sort of like a spiritual retreat. And, you know, I love the name. I was uncomfortable with it at first because I was like, oh, this is kind of woo-woo. I don't know who's going to, you know. But then, of course, over time, it sat on me for like a year. And I was just like, but this is what it is. Like, this is how I lead. And I want to know, what does that mean for you guys? And how do you show up? And how does it show up for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that name, by the way. I love that
name. Thank you.
No, we're so focused on what the heart needs.
Mm.
And we even talk about, like, with our small business owners specifically, what does it light you up to try to achieve, you know, 2% or 20% growth year over year? Or is it something that's more sustainable, that you're providing a resource that clients want? And so there's a difference between SMART goals and heart goals, right?
Mm-hmm,
that's one thing. But when it comes to the heart-centered leadership, when I think of heart-centered leadership, I go back to something I learned a long time ago about servant leadership.
Yes.
And how it feels like heart-centered is an evolution. of servant leader, because it's not just about serving others as a servant leader. You also have to take care of yourself. And so that's where heart-centered leadership comes into play, is where you have the vulnerability, empathy, and emotional intelligence to take care of yourself and others.
Yeah.
Without sacrificing either.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack?
From my perspective, I see heart-centered leadership as being genuine and authentic. Now, I agree with the idea and the notion of Greenleaf's servant leadership. That's absolutely appropriate, and that is wonderful. But for me, distill it down even further, it has to be genuine and authentic. And I think that's what leading from the heart would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what does authenticity mean to you?
To me, what it means is you're putting out your genuine self to be really vulnerable to the community, servant leadership in a way. You're showing who you truly are, that you care, that you're compassionate, that you are doing things that are not necessarily in business school and business graduate school. They teach you to optimize everything. And you have to take a step back from that and say, humans are humans, and we want to treat them with dignity and respect. And to show care and compassion, because they are really your greatest resource. Most organizations don't realize it, but they have three primary assets: their land, their labor, and their capital. Most companies don't own their land. So that means labor and capital. And capital is flighty. So if you take care of your team by embracing them as humans, being your authentic self, being genuine, being caring, being compassionate, I think that your probability for success will be vastly increased. You'll have a great team, and you'll have great experience getting to whatever goal or objective you want to be. So to me, that's being authentic, is just being real. Don't be a poser, to quote the kids. But yeah, you know, Patty and I could sit here and we can quote from all sorts of different theories of management, different theories of marketing. But that's not necessarily what people want to hear. People, yes, they want things based in theory, and we will do that. But they want to hear, what is our genuine opinion of those theories? What is our real take on it? We talk about, for example, Net Promoter Score quite often, and give our genuine take on that, where people don't necessarily see it from the same perspective. So giving them that genuine humanistic approach to what this tool is and how this tool can be used, I think helps.
So what is your opinion on the Net Promoter Score?
It's a gap score.
It's a gap score.
Yeah. So if you have a Net Promoter Score that says your Net Promoter Score is 40, that means there's a 40-point gap between your promoters and your detractors, right? But what if the detractors only represented 60% and your promoters 60% and your detractors 20%? That would be a 40-point gap, right? Now, what if your promoters were 80% and your detractors were then 40%? That's a different story entirely. But what is masked is in the Net Promoter Score is that's still a 40-point gap. So right. You have to understand, going back to data, you have to understand that 80% who are your promoters, and then my example, those are people who actually, I'm going to go to your example, gave an emotional response. They led with their heart, because the top box or top two boxes on a 10-point scale are an emotional response. And so that's my quick take on it in 30 seconds or less.
My little ad with the Net Promoter Score is the fact that, okay, in traditional capitalism, the Net Promoter Score always says, you know, try to build your promoters, try to take your neutral to promoters, and don't worry about detractors. But we've seen nonprofits and member organizations try to use Net Promoter Score, and then they're doing it the classically trained way. And we're like, but these are people.
Yeah.
They're your people that you're serving, and they're not happy.
Yeah.
Now, in a member organization, that leads to attrition, non-renewal, but also they're bitching to their friends about you. It's not like you're going to you're buying a product and then you rate that product and then you're one and done. They're people. heart-centered leadership. They're people. Yeah. So yeah, that's another perspective that we have is it, and we always say that I love I could come up with this and I love it. It's the fix the store, not the score.
Yeah. So and as a person, I've gone into different divisions within my organization, and I'm the fixer. And I usually I take like the art of war approach, and I take the detractors and I make them my neutrals very quickly, right? Because they are the loudest in the room. They are your influencers. They're and people hate me for it because they're like, oh, those are the worst people here. They're the troublemakers. And I'm like, guys, those are just labels. And if you ever label people, they can never be anything but that. So I'm going to remove that and allow them to be just people. And it shifts every time. And people wonder, and it's just ego that stops people from doing that. Because they hurt me in the past and I took it personal and all the things. So yes, I definitely agree with both of you guys on that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love your point on that. And you know, Patty mentioned earlier emotional attention and emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
So often I think leaders are lacking that, and that's why they can't take that critique or that perceived critique from the detractors. The detractors in many ways are often the canary in the coal mine. They're saying there's a problem here.
There's a problem here.
You got to listen to it. And so often they get leaders, like you say, they're attaching labels. Well, they're this and that and whatever. They're just grumpy. No, they're telling you a story that you need to take a moment, take a pause, take a listen, understand it. And then you're right to transition them up to the next level.
Yeah. And you're right. They may be grumpy and they may be upset and they may not know how to articulate their frustration. And all of that is okay.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
All of it's fine. I'm still going to listen because what they have to say, there are nuggets in there and we could probably like fix the coal mine, fix the store.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
One of my favorite exercises that we did in my doctoral program is we had to present something, sit down and not say, again, another marketing research term, a damn word. And the rest of the class got to critique us. Oof. We weren't allowed to interact or explain or do whatever. But it was such the revealing self-awareness that I've ever had. And it's like, oh, this is brilliant. I love it. And I didn't necessarily love the critiques because, you know, who does? But it taught me to be humble, ontologically humble. I don't know what I don't know. And I need to be aware that I don't know at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and it takes deep breaths, right? When you're getting critiqued, you're just like, this is painful and I'm here.
You know, in graduate school, you're taught to roll up your sleeves and, okay, we're going to fight this out.
Right, right,
but
right.
No, this was such a great exercise. And if any of the listeners have an opportunity to do something like that, I'd highly recommend it. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sorry, I stepped on you.
No, that's okay. I often tell leaders who have issues with those troublemakers to go to them and ask them like, hey, what's your problem with me? I want to preface this by saying, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to listen. I'm not going to get defensive. And they just sit there and they listen, but it opens up the relationship so much because there's usually a defense. And so leaders who have, you know, you have two or three people who just cannot stand you. That's okay. You don't need everyone to like you, but you do want to understand why. And I think that that's such a, positive thing to do, although it will feel negative in the moment. I want to shift gears back to authenticity because we mentioned, no, that's okay. I love this. You mentioned grad school, you mentioned school, and a lot of us went to school and blah, 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 and we've been programmed. Authenticity, while it is being your whole self, what do you say to those people who don't know? One, that they're not being themselves. And then two, what are specific ways that people can find out who they actually are and what they like?
Patty, what do you think? I'm thinking there's might be a little bit of Colby in this, but...
Well, I mean, definitely we're lovers of the Colby Index A. You can take it as an individual. You can take it as like a romantic partner, but they don't have anything for teams. So we kind of figured that out. So, you know, we help teams understand how that they can work with each other based on kind of their skills and abilities for diving into information, making decisions, handling process or changes, and making well-oiled machines and managing risk, like all of that. And it really gives people that kind of appreciation for how they run. Yeah, we're big test junkies. I mean, you know, strengthsfinders, Myers-Briggs, like all those, mm-hmm. we like those, but they change really fast. Mm-hmm. Like that test retest number is pretty low. Colby, it's about, I think I heard recently it was in like the 80s. So sometimes it will adjust depending on how high up a person gets in their leadership. But as far as like what they're doing in their current situation, it doesn't adjust until they have to learn a new skill.
A new skill.
And so it's really great for team building and teamwork. But also, you have to start asking yourself questions that you may never asked yourself before, right? Jack and I have talked about this a lot, where we hired an executive coach who was much more holistic in nature, because she's also a dear friend. And she started asking us questions about ourselves and our desires and our passions that you don't get asked at business school, right? You don't get asked about what you want and how you want it. And we've translated that into how we work with our clients. So like when we work with solopreneurs and small teams, we have a program we call Blueprint for Growth. We like the word blueprint. It's easy to get. But what we do is we pull out that, like I said, that intuitive information from people based on the questions we ask that they've just never asked it before. And it's actually questions that we came up with in previous lives when we would do performance reviews for our employees or like and other people. But do it for yourself. You know, what's worked? What hasn't worked? What do you wish worked better? What happened you wish didn't happen? Like all these questions. But we have a systematic process of pulling it out of people in a way that then, like I said before, we can then organize it, sort it, and categorize it to then go, this is your next right step. Based on who you are.
Right.
You've never been asked these questions before, so you don't know what kind of answers you're going to get. And then once you do, you go, wow. And then the celestial blueprint, I mean, with the people that we've done it for, there's an utter sense of relief of being seen.
Yes.
And sometimes for the first time, even for themselves, seeing themselves right. for the first time.
Right, right.
And they go, that's why. That's actually a superpower. I shouldn't be so hung up on that aspect. Maybe if I could get myself here, then I wouldn't be so much there. So, I mean, the one thing we love to do with our clients is shift their perspectives.
Yeah.
On anything.
And that's deep. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to just tag on a couple little thoughts on that. That was beautifully said, by Patty, is that you mentioned the Art of War earlier. So when you're thinking about yourself and why do you think what you think, Sun Tzu said it best, first know yourself. Mm-hmm. And 1,000 times you will be victorious.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take that and you start to put it into questioning, why do you think the way you do? Take a moment, take a pause. And say, if you leap to this is the prescription, this is the way we're going to do it. Take a moment back and say, well, why did I think that? Why do I? It's a little bit of epistemology on why do you know what you know?
Yeah.
And that's a science. So if you take that moment, like, why do I think, I don't know, let's pick politics is in the news. Why do I believe on the right? Why do I believe on the left?
Yeah.
Take that moment and reinforce your values and you'll become quite aware of maybe that what you originally believed isn't the right belief for you when you actually take a deep dive into it. You can use any of the personality tests or social assessments, but either way, you'll get a sense that, are you in aligned with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're aligned with yourself, then that is your true self. And I would encourage everybody to be a little bit of a four-year-old. Four-year-olds are the best scientists on the planet. They are absolutely infallible because they always ask the question, why?
Yeah.
Ask why.
Yeah. Yeah. And for a leader who does not like to be asked why, just search within yourself, right? Why? Mm-hmm. You don't like to be asked why.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're taught in business school to be deliberate. And once you've made a decision, do not change it.
Deviate, right?
Yeah. And that's actual antithetical to what we should be doing.
Right.
Maddie mentioned servant leadership earlier. I mean, that's one example where you're humbled yourself to say, maybe that isn't the best decision. And then you can change it because you are realizing that the new path forward is based on the information you have available now that you didn't have when you made the decision. But exactly. So many people get locked into this pattern, and it makes it uncomfortable for everybody.
They just want to be right.
Oh, yeah. Right at any cost. And that's...
You're watching the train go off the tracks and you're like, hey, wait.
Yeah, you were right about the speed of the train. Yeah, we got there. We can't turn it, but we got there. But, you know, the phrase is ontological humility. And that means you have to be humble in that you don't know everything. You only know what information you have available at this moment.
Yeah. And that's okay. So each of you, now that's beautiful. What is one small but powerful shift that leaders can make today to create a more interdependent, heart-centered team?
Yeah, I think one small mindset shift that leaders can embrace, and this is a practice, because Jack and I are still working on it too.
Sure.
Is let go of the need to control everything. And trust the process. Just trust the process. You can know what you want to have accomplished. You don't have to worry about all the hows to get there, because as you learn new information, as you learn new data points, you want to remain nimble enough to shift to get to the North Star, right? And even sometimes as you learn new things, you go, oh, that's not even what I want anymore. Okay, let's move here. You need to focus on the next right step that you can control. Everything else, you can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta let the process happen.
Yeah. And little by little.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big believer in the signal to noise ratio. So you start looking at what is all the extra things happening and what does your focus really need to be, and kind of bring everybody into alignment with that, but also empowering your subordinates to be open and honest with you as you are with them. And so if you have a preference for how they need to communicate, sit down and have a conversation. Say, hey, look, if you want, for example, I was having a little bit of a challenge with an employee of mine years ago, and wasn't that I didn't value the opinion that she was rendering. It was the manner in which she was conveying it. Don't just fly off the handle out of frustration. Save that for a tool that you might need later.
Right.
But if you want to have a conversation, give me an academic or a business case for what this information is. I'll open up that conversation. Let's have it. And let's have it at the appropriate time. So empower your team members and the people that are within your organization to be open and honest and be able to have those conversations at the right time.
I really like that. I think I'm going to use it, because when you ask, build a business case, they actually have to think through why it's impacting them in said negative way and the solution.
Yeah. I gave her a whiteboard and I said, and we were in a conference room and I said, okay, here's a pen. Let's do point counterpoint and let's go through this.
Yeah.
Because she was such a remarkable team member, and she was just frustrated about a certain process that wasn't within our control. But what we had to do was sit back and take a step at it and look 100%. At it so that we can make the business case upstream.
Exactly. That's good. I like that.
So once we were in alignment, we were golden.
Correct.
Collaboration.
And you can articulate it, and collaboration is key. So final thoughts.
In a role
you get to go first, Jack. Go ahead.
In any universe you want to be in.
In a world full of insane people, the sane appear to be insane. Let's go with that. No, Patty and I love being able to work with clients and change hearts and minds and create change and impact. And that, at the end of the day, that's really what lights us up. And so thank you for having us here and being able to share some of our funness and chaos and a little bit of our playfulness. We can blend a lot of different elements, whether it be classical training, as you know, we talked a little bit about school and rigidness of graduate programs, to incorporating new and progressive ideas into that and really tailoring it to an organization. So I guess my one takeaway would be, don't be as rigid, be flexible, be open-minded. There are other ways to do something. My I'm a big fan of the movie, The Beautiful Mind with Nash.
Yes.
One of the things that people did not bring out about the movie with Nash and his theory of governing dynamics was the notion of conflict. And what is the origin of conflict? And conflict gets to be, from Nash's perspective, having a different view of the efficiency of solving the problem. So if we are walking by a body of water and we see somebody in the water flailing, we would each come up with, by our background and by our training, different solutions to help that guy or that person flailing in the water. Somebody might say, get a boat, we'll go out and get you. Or somebody might say, throw a rope. Another person might say, call 911. I might just say, stand up, you idiot, it's 2 feet deep. The point being is where the conflict comes is that we all have a different view of the efficiency of solving the same problem. So if you realize that within an organization and you realize that there is that tendency, creating the space and grace to be able to have conversations that doesn't involve having a helicopter come in and life flag that guy out of this 2 foot deep pond, I think you'll get better outcomes. That's my take, Patty.
You know, I'll go more on the no shame self-promotion pitch side of all the things that we've talked about today. Jack and I can do a lot for a lot of people. We're not a hammer and something is a nail. You know, like you get with some consultants and they ascribe to this process or they subscribe to this thing, and that's the thing that you'll get. We are completely agnostic. We even start farther back. Like sometimes when a client comes to us and goes, I want a dashboard, we go, what are you trying to solve first? We back it up. We back it up further. We make sure everybody's in alignment with what it is, right? And so the way we like to explain ourselves and the whole kind of context of who we are, not just what we do, but who we are, is we're your strategy and innovation team, right? We talked about all sorts of facets of everything, and it's data and we love it. And we could go market research route, primary research, secondary research. We could do anything and everything with data analysis and business intelligence and operational efficiency and la, 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 all of it. We back it up and go, what's needed?
Right.
What's needed right now? And what's the most important things that we need to solve to move somebody forward? And so we're a little like grounded with data, the date it was born. I also pulled its human design. It's a man gen, which means we bounce around and do all the things. And as a, you know, collect like that, we just have to embrace that as what grounded with data is. Like, you know, some companies are like, well, or some coaches are like, you have to niche. If you niche down, then you get it. And it's like, actually not grounded with data. It's a man gen. We got to get in. We got to bounce. We got to, you know, follow our joy and then move on to the next thing, you know, like, and it might be completely different than what we did before, you know, and, but it's with the skill sets that what Jack and I have, it works. It's yeah. So good. It's just so good.
Yes.
So yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you.
Of course. Jack, you're going to add something?
No, I really love the way that Patty said that. It is so fun.
Yeah. And that's all. We also have like a LinkedIn newsletter. So, you know, subscribe to that, Grounded with Data.
Shameless plug. We're going to have all the links in the show notes for sure. Because, I think what you guys are doing is revolutionary. And the fact that you don't have a niche is aligned. It's so aligned with me because I keep getting that direct. You got a niche. And I'm just like, yeah, but leadership is for everyone, guys. It's not even people who are running a team. You cannot have a team and need these skills and competencies. And there's magic in collaboration. I'm a high collaborator as well. And there's magic
You got a four. You're a 2-4. Obviously, those fours, you like collaboration and community.
Yes, definitely. You know, and so just magic in collaboration, guys. It's what Jack and Patty are doing is remarkable. And please connect with them. Go follow them. Do all the things because this may be, they may be speaking your language, and that's what's important. And so thank you both for being on the show. I genuinely enjoyed this conversation greatly. I learned a lot, and I'm sure the audience will as well. And that concludes our episode of Leadership from the Heart.
I do have a question.
Maybe not.
I am.
Absolutely.
Since you got to ask us a lot of fun questions, let me ask you, what was your one fun takeaway that you would go, I'm going to use this. Mentioned one.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I want to dive in deeper into the type of generator that I am. And I think that I'm going to have my entire team take the human design quiz today. because I think that while I'm intuitive and knowing who they are as like a high empathy person, I think that I am not using this really simple tool that I use for myself to know them a little bit more. And I think, Patty, you've got me where you said, when presented with conflict or presented with a project, are they going to investigate more, or are they going to, what do they need? And that's genuinely what I want for them, is what they need. Because I feel like I'm at times running in circles because I'm leading in the way that I think they need, but I could also just know what they need.
We also have a thing where we take their, whether they're a projector, man, gen, generator across the top, and then we put the Colby things down the bottom, and then we put their profile in it so you can start to see trends of, well, this generator and this number does this, but then you know who they are, but mm-hmm. then you can start to see like, oh, all the fours are here. Well, that makes sense. You know, you start to get it, and it's...
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And also, Jack, the one big takeaway that I also want to use is when presented with frustration or something that somebody, we had something happen earlier this morning. I'm shifting my team to start to think. They've been told prior to my arrival here what to do for so long that they are not critically thinking through and making sound decisions. It's almost like a pause. So I think that building a business case will automatically promote that thinking and also the solution. And whether it's right or wrong, I don't care. I'm like, fuck it up, guys, please. Like, that tells me that you're doing something. And so I think that, you know, and it's going to be tedious at first, and I'm going to explain myself, but I'm going to ask them, like, before you present something that you're frustrated with that another team member, build your business case around it, like, so that other people can also understand why you're frustrated, you know? And I think that that's a beautiful thing, because I think that's what my mentor did with me all those years ago without me even knowing that that's what was happening. But I tell people, yeah, you want to do that, you got to just build a case. You have to build the concept, and then you can move into proof of concept. But like, why do you want to do that? And what are you trying to, Patty? What are you trying to fix? What are you trying to like solve for? So that's the way I think, but I think I was taught that, and I didn't know how to teach people that without asking them to like build the business case and of course supporting them through that. So those are the two biggest takeaways for me, selfishly.
Yay. Well, that's all. Let us know how that goes, because I
absolutely will.
Love to have.
I absolutely
hear
will.
Your take on it. Now, we also learned that there's a lot of generational challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way you speak to somebody in Gen or Boomer is mm-hmm. different than you would speak to somebody in an X or Millennial. And Gen Z, oh my God. We could tell you stories, but and so if you have a mixed team like that,
mm-hmm.
you might need to speak to them differently so that you can give them the space and grace to make that business case. Just keep that in mind.
For sure. Thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure. The first thing I learned in college, the very first day, first evil 7 o'clock in the morning math class, professor walked on in the class. This is my first experience in college. Walked up, wrote the word think on the board. So I don't care what you get out of this class, as long as you know this.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think that I interview a couple of tech people and AI, and I love all of it. And if you were never taught how to think critically, it is a muscle that needs to be used and taught, and have grace for those that, you know, they've only been operating from a different perspective of being told what to do, because that's easy.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Well, so many people don't understand that there's a difference between a critique and criticism.
What is the difference?
Well, critique is a criticism is actually you're picking on somebody. Mm. You're intentionally destructing what they're doing. Or a critique is you're looking at what they've done or how they've done it, and you're offering solutions or ways to improve what they've done, not just to bring them down.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
And if your team understands that, it also helps. Like I said, I had to sit there and let people critique me.
Yeah.
Because that helped me to break from that mindset of being criticized. I mean,
yes.
I had those grumpy aunts that would tear me apart if I walked into a room. Nobody likes that.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's always the aunts, but that's what they do.
And language is everything. So that's important.
To actually take in a critique where we are trying to help you to get better. And don't take this personally. but maybe the color red isn't the best choice for you. I don't know.
All right. All right. 1-4. All right. 2-4. You guys are just going to keep going forever on this podcast.
I don't feel like we're done though.
Call you out on this now, guys. What? Yeah. Jack's a 1-4. You're a 2-4. The fours.
Four. May the fours be with you.
So with that, we will end today's episode. And thank you again both so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.